This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Liz Tung. This story is from our episode, What's Best for Our Pets. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. One of the hardest decisions a pet owner has to make comes at the end of their animal's life.
When is an animal suffering enough that they would wish to be released from life, which is so precious to them?
That's bioethicist and author Jessica Pierce again. Jessica describes some of the end-of-life decisions she had to make for her dog, Odie, in her book, The Last Walk.
And I have chosen euthanasia for two dogs. Extremely difficult choice to make. And I think you always wonder, did I do the right thing? Did I do the right thing at the right time? Was it too soon? Was it too late? And there's a lot of second guessing, a lot of guilt.
It's something reporter Grant Hill and his family recently went through with their own dog, Emma. He tells the story of sending Emma to the big farm in the sky and the tough decisions that came before it. Here's Grant.
The saddest thing about growing up is discovering all those magical places that filled so much of your imagination as a kid. Let's just say, really aren't so magical. Right now, I'm at the final frontier of depressing destinations. Today, I'm at the farm. You know, the farm. The one where your parents told you your childhood pets went to go live happily ever after with all the other animals. The farm from which there is no return. Well, obviously the farm is not a farm at all, at least not this one. I'm in a small building at the end of a long driveway, lined with gravestones etched with names like Lucky and Buttons. An employee named Megan Cianci has guided me into a room painted in calming colors. A large window is cut out from an interior wall, allowing us to peer through at a capacious metal box that looks like something a train conductor might shovel coal into. A fuzzy purple blanket covers a thing that appears to be lumpy and stiff on a table in front of us.
And for a lot of people, pets are their fur babies. I mean, there's a lot of people that they don't have children. They have pets.
Megan is a bereavement counselor here at this pet funeral home, crematorium and cemetery in central New Jersey.
And is it common for people to witness their dogs?
A lot of people need closure.
She told me a surprising amount of pet owners elect to stand right where I'm standing now and watch their deceased animals enter the crematorium. Today, she's helping another pet owner, me. Underneath that purple blanket in the room is my dog Emma. My family got Emma when I was in fourth grade. I'd been begging my parents for a dog for too long, and they finally budged.
At the time, Dad and I were both working, and, we didn't want you or your brother to come into an empty home.
That's my mom, Iris Hill. She and my dad set very strict terms when we first got Emma. She was to be my responsibility. I had to do all the dirty work, but, of course, it never quite works that way. Still, my older brother and I were made to sign a contract, ensuring we would take care of her. And from then on, Emma, a Welsh Springer Spaniel, reigned over our house. She never quite became the over-affectionate greeter my mom imagined. Emma was sort of regal, a little standoffish, even. She would sit just far enough away from you that you really had to make an effort to pet her. So, whenever Emma let her guard down to rub her snout on your leg or gently lick your toes, it felt special. Like she secretly loved you the most. Emma was 94 in dog years when she died. At the end, it was hard to remember a time when her dark red and white fur wasn't all faded and bristled. One day, she randomly came in from the backyard with a limp. She would never really walk straight again. She was just old. During the last year, everything, even just breathing, was clearly a struggle for her. She became known as the troll downstairs because the kitchen was her territory, and she would let you know by sluggishly pacing and snorting until you let her lick your plate after dinner. Then, she started to pee all over the house, looking confused, eyes glazed over like she didn't know if she was inside or out. To us, it looked like she felt bad about her accidents.
You know, I think we kind of knew that it would progressively get worse, and the medication did help for a little bit, but and we tried the doggy diapers, you know, we tried that. We tried a lot of different things.
We blocked off whole sections of our house with caution tape to prevent accidents in high-risk areas. There was no chance of her jumping over it. We hosed down countless rugs, started buying 409 in bulk. All that might seem crazy if you don't actually own a pet.
So I see some people go through heroics that don't necessarily benefit the patient.
That's my uncle, Mike Petrano. He's been a veterinarian for over 30 years, and he's seen many clients go to extremes to keep their pets alive.
There are some type of cancers that dogs, cats get that we can say no matter what's done, it doesn't really buy them good quality time. And I will say that people who have elected to treat those cancers, maybe chemo or whatever, most of them do regret putting the animal through that for 3 months.
Like he said, when it comes to senior pets, he advises his clients on treatments based on whether it will give the animal more good quality time, which is markedly different from just more time. We struggled with this as a family. We saw that Emma was suffering, but we couldn't bring ourselves to let her go.
The decision weighed on me a lot.
That's my mom again.
And I found myself really kind of depressed about it because, you know, it wasn't a decision I really wanted to make. I would just pray that the Lord would take her and I wouldn't have to make that decision. But obviously that didn't happen.
Even in old age, Emma was still way too stubborn to make anything easy on us. So we had to set a date, which we eventually did. But the decisions didn't end there. What followed after was a bizarre menu of grim choices. Would she be more comfortable at home for the procedure, or would that make her feel like we were tricking her somehow? Did we all want to be there for her during it, or would watching it be too traumatic for us? The forecast looked beautiful for the coming week. Should we let her have a few more days of gorgeous weather? Then, finally, the day came. My Uncle Mike was on his way to our home with his kit.
Well, I remember trying to be outside with her until he got there because, I don't know, I just wanted her to be able to be outside, you know. And we had pizza, you know, and she had her pizza crust. It was like we were home, well, home for her. It was very difficult to see her go, but we can't be selfish.
Two weeks later at the crematorium, I'm making small talk with Megan and my Uncle Mike. He had personally brought Emma over here from his office, where he keeps the bodies of his clients' deceased animals in a big freezer before they can be processed. An employee lifts the blanket to prepare Emma for the last leg of her long journey home to the farm. She doesn't look cold or anything. For the first time in a long time, she doesn't look uncomfortable at all. Megan reassures me it's common for owners to witness their pets go in to make sure the cremains they receive are really their pets. But I didn't have to. I nod. They ask me if I'm ready. I'm not. But I find a little comfort knowing no one ever really is.
That was Grant Hill reporting.